440679, T&amp;W Holding. We'll hear from Mr. Kilpatrick first.
May I please this board? This case arises from the City of Union's revocation of a certificate of occupancy on a building that had been operating as a bar and restaurant called Palapas for over 20 years with two units on top that were vacation rentals that had been operating as a bed and breakfast for over 20 years. There was no pre-deprivation notice or opportunity for a hearing given to the appellants in this case. The building official came out and red-tagged all four floors of the building with stating that zero occupancy on the entire building, meaning no use for any purpose whatsoever. This, as the record shows, there were conflicting views on what actually transpired, and the court erred by construing the evidence in favor of the movement for to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction and not on the non-movement like it was supposed to.
So the ruling before us is the district court dismissing for lack of finality.
And for lack of final decision.
Would you agree with the factual characterization that you made fairly imperfect efforts to get a final city council ruling? In other words, factually, it's a little bit of a turgid record to see exactly how you brought it to higher ups and whether or not you did enough. And as I understand it, your argument is legally that's not relevant, but factually it's wrong. Is that correct?
I do believe that's right, Your Honor. And I would say that the City of Pima also doesn't follow those formalities like a larger homeless city would. It's a general law type A city. There are no residential certificates of occupancy. That's been established in the record, and that's one of the...
So what is the final order that allows, that existed? So there's legal error for the district court to have dismissed this. Who entered what final order?
Okay. The final order would be the order of the building official slash fire chief, along with the decision of city council not to render a decision, as it said, when he appealed it to city council. The way that happened as in the record is, first, Mr. Plasek, the owner of all three businesses, went to the mayor. He met with him at a restaurant in Great Lakes Shores. They discussed these issues. He then said, I'm putting it on the city council agenda for the next city council meeting. That was placed on the agenda. The city.
Right. I think we know the disagreement the parties have about the record. I'm asking you whether legally you think there was a final order when the red tag was put on the building, period, no matter what happened next? Or is your argument there's clear error because the jurisdictional facts show that you actually did get a city council final ruling, even if it was by inaction? Which is it?
Okay. The final order would be actually red tagging the building.
Okay.
And the basis for that is in the Bowlby case, where the Fifth Circuit, this panel, distinguished between taking away a permit, an existing permit, and refusing to issue a permit that someone applied for.
Now, did you state in the district court that the city council action was required in order to accomplish finality? Looks like in the record here, the court says, but what I care about right now that's before me is the one about the zero occupancy notice. So is that, in your view, subject to final decision by city council? And you said yes.
Well, I would like to clarify that point that I've continued speaking and that didn't come out in the transcript.
Okay.
Qualifying that on what certain types of decisions and not that particular decision. But the under Bowlby, when a permit is taken away and it's irreversible, once the permit is taken away, as the court noted, even an appeal to city council would not undo the damage that had been done by the irreversible taking away of the existing permit. In Bowlby, there's an operator of a snow cone business on a street corner. The city took away her permits that she had already granted, and they held, she did not have to appeal to the city council. She did not have to appeal to the mayor, despite the city ordinance stating that that was required in order to get a final decision. So once that has been taken away, it is sufficiently final. And when you put that in context of Penn Central about how far a regulation goes, just like here, there is no question about how far the regulation goes here. In her case, that she could not operate that business, no longer use it for any purpose. In our case, we cannot use that building for any purpose. And even though we have been fully permitted, authorized to use that for over 20 years. So the analysis stops there, that is sufficiently ripe to have a finality about how far the regulation goes. How far does it go here? We can't use the building for any reason, for any purpose, any type of use, even the existing use we already have. And the city attorney, the mayor, and even in this in the trial court proceedings and in this appeal, they've taken the position that no certificate of occupancy will be reinstated and no permits will be issued unless a change of occupancy is approved or applied for and approved by the building official. That is not required because we're not trying to change the use. And that's really the legal issue that it comes down to.
Was the district court looking ahead, or can we look past sort of whether or not you experienced injury that's cognizable and final to just ask you, where is there even a cognizable taking? And I'm focusing not on the food truck, just on the occupancy. If all the city's doing is saying you need a permit to make sure no one goes in there when there's hazardous material, how is that a taking?
Okay, on the day that the red tags were put on the building, the business was operating out of the building. There's been no evidence shown anywhere that there's anything dangerous about the building. And in fact, the evidence shows that the mayor, in the what I would call an informal appeal to the mayor, that's the rule of the fire informal appeal, the mayor said that if you agree not to use any part of the property for short-term rentals, then we will and apply for a change of occupancy permit, which requires them to bring the whole building up to code, lose all the grandfather status. Then we will give you your certificate of occupancy back.
So are we talking about two different claims? The certificate of occupancy of zero, I'm sorry, the change of occupancy requirement and the zero occupancy rule, are those two different claims you're asserting, or are they intertwined?
The change of occupancy is the crux of the entire case.
Okay.
The fact that the city attorney, city council, city mayor, building official, and city administrator all said, we're not going to give you any permits, we're not going to give you any permits back until you apply for a certificate or change of occupancy for the entire building. And our client said, well, all I did was fix some pipes that broke in a freeze that didn't cause massive damage, like it could trigger some other provisions that would require you to bring things up to code. Here, that's not an issue. All he did was fix some pipes, and then they said, oh, well, now we're going to make a change. Since we think we changed the use of the building, we are going to require you to bring the whole building up to code. We're going to take away your certificate of occupancy, and you can't operate. And that right there is sufficiently final to bring the claim for judicial termination.
Now, when you say all three of them, the fire marshal, the mayor, and the city council have all made that communication clear, what's the record support for the city council having said that?
Okay.
Besides it being on their agenda, which then would be lack of action on your appeal, have they affirmatively said to your client in the record, you can't do anything until you get this certificate?
The city council as a body, no, has not said that.
Okay.
What they did say, and this also goes to supports our utility argument and finality argument for that matter, because it's clear that the position they've taken is clear that a change of occupancy is going to be required, is you would have to go through the entire process of upgrading the whole building. And but he's not actually changing the use. Why would you apply for a change of use permit if you have no intention of changing the use? You just want to continue the same use.
Right, just because all we have in front of us is a district court's decision that it lacks Article III jurisdiction, no injury that's final to your client. When you say the city council has communicated this prohibition, what are you referring to?
The city council, through the documents that were produced in discovery,
yeah,
has followed along with the city attorney's recommendation. Now, again, this is not a city of council, the body itself acting. What did happen was when the agenda item was placed on the open, on the consent agenda to be approved, they moved it to the executive session, and then we received a response from the building official communicating on behalf of city council that the city council as a body made a quote decision not to render a decision, which really exemplifies what's going on here. Is, you know, that they were playing this as I've seen some commentators, a procedural merry-go-round. You know, there's no way that he's ever going to be able to.
The parties have briefed several relevant city codes. What code are you relying on that if an issue is in on the agenda for them and they don't decide it, that itself is a final order?
Okay. So Pima Code section 50-64A. Candidly, the wording could be more clear and better, but the city seems to be using that to their advantage. But what it states is that when there is an issue brought before the city council, that with a building official decision, they have 30 days to make a decision on that, as the ordinance says, the objections are waived, the city's objections are waived. So putting that in context, what would those objections be? Well, those objections would be reasons for not giving us permit, or things that would be cured, or something of that nature. So when that issue is brought before the city council and they don't act and they make a decision not to render a decision, it is then the objection by the building official is waived and therefore deemed approved. Sort of like the shot clock rule with plat applications. If you apply for a plat, the city doesn't act within 30 days, then it's deemed approved. This doesn't say deemed approved, but it says the objections are waived, and I think the substance is essentially the same. Now, moving on to the, in Palazzolo, the Supreme Court held that a city cannot use repetitive unfair land use procedures to avoid a final decision. And that's precisely on point of what happened here. Every time this place took this issue to city council, it was either pushed off with a decision not to render a decision, or the additional requirements were imposed. But at the end of the day, the city it's very clear how the regulations apply to this property. What use is permitted? No use of the building is permitted. That's clear. That distinction now draws with a future proposed development where someone has a piece of land that's undeveloped. It's unclear what is permissible, what the permissible use of that land will be. And allowing the administrative agencies to use their discretion to determine what's a permissible use on undeveloped land makes sense, and that's still the law in this country. When you have something that's already been developed and already permitted and it's already operating, and then the city comes in and takes away that permit without any pre-deprivation notice or opportunity for a hearing, that is sufficiently final at that point. There's no question about what the permitted use of this property is. Zero. Zero lots. When you have a land development, there could be a certain number of lots or certain sizes.
Well, Judge Engelhardt clarified there are two different permits that you haven't obtained. Correct? There is one that pertains to the non-hazardous condition. That's still effective? Or is there only one permit at the moment that you lack in order to use the building?
The permit we lack to use the first two floors of the building is just the certificate of occupancy.
Right. And that's premised on no determination's been made that you have removed all hazardous conditions, right?
There have been no notice given to us of any hazardous conditions.
Right, but that is what is expected of you.
That would be expected.
I mean, the fire marshal's made that determination, right or wrong?
Well, the fire marshal never made that determination. Okay. His deposition was very clear that he never entered the building. He couldn't identify one life safety issue. The only thing he saw was that from the outside, there were some plumbing
lines that looked like they might not be up to code, but he couldn't answer whether they were or not.
But that is the basis for his, for the red tag. Lack, not up to code.
It was a general statement, not.
And whether it's right or wrong, you may well be able to defeat it. My question is that a taking? Is that a taking when a city closes down a building because it claims there are hazardous conditions? What's your best authority that that's a taking at all?
The argument that that's a taking,
yeah,
is what should happen is the that's the pre-deprivation notice.
It's a due process argument as opposed to a takings claim.
Correct.
Okay.
It's procedural due process.
Okay.
It's out of a meaningful opportunity for hearing. I see my time.
Yeah, but you have rebuttal time. Thank you very much. Mr. Dixon. Yeah, please. Anytime.
Good afternoon. I'm Kyle Dixon. I represent the athlete, Mr. Yukini. This whole process was started not by anyone from the city. It was started by the owners of the business of the three appellants and the three plaintiffs. If our brief on the page 13 has a timeline, which is undisputed, Mr. Placid came to City Hall and he filed an application to turn the third and fourth stories of his building into an STR, short-term rental. Short-term rentals didn't exist 20 years ago. I think they really became into existence about 10 years ago. And the city of Kima, like other cities, have passed ordinances regarding STRs. Kima did the same thing. But he came in on May 27, 2021, and he filled out an application for an STR. We didn't force him to do that. He didn't ask him to do that. That was his decision. We said, great, but now that you want to make the third and fourth floors that you're not using STRs, you're going to have to change the occupancy of that building. Because today your building is commercial, you need to change it for commercial residential. So he came in, his own accord, on June 28, 2021, and he filed an application to change the surface of the building from commercial to commercial residential. We said, great, we have to go inspect your building. You've got to make sure that your building that you want to use for STRs meets the current code, et cetera. We do have regulations regarding STRs. He said, fine. We went over there on July 8, 2021, and it was inspected by a third party hired by the city that does our property inspections. They came back and they gave a deplorable report of this building. Deplorable. They never had an issue with that report. They never come back and said, oh, it's false, those things aren't true, those things didn't happen, those things don't need to be done.
Counsel, before we get too far, before we get too far into the merits, aren't we talking about what the district court ruled insofar as it's the fire marshal's authority, isn't it?
Fire marshal.
And so once the fire marshal makes that decision and the property is proclaimed by the fire department to be inadequate or insufficient, that order's final. It must be complied with, correct?
Correct.
Even if you appeal to either the mayor or the city council, that order is imposed and property owner can't do anything in the meantime.
Correct. He has 5 days to go talk to the mayor, which he did not do, or he has 30 days to appeal to council by sending a letter to the city secretary, which he did not do.
What's the best case that we can look at that requires them to do that before we have jurisdiction? It's not a jurisdictional rule, is it? It's just a process to afford them, since it's a case about due process, it's a process that they can avail themselves of to review a decision. But what's the best case that we cannot hear the case until that's done. Either of those things are done.
They have the option of talking to the mayor within 5 days or petition the city council, who has the authority to do whatever they want to do. They can undo it, they can change it, they can modify it, they can impose it. That's up to the city council's law, which was never brought before the city
right. council. But I think I'm curious about the same question, because this is the argument. You were the counsel for the city below too, right?
Sir?
Were you the counsel for the city in the district court?
At that time, no. I took over about 2 months later.
Okay, because you probably read the dismissal hearing.
Correct.
And there too, the argument to the district court was, this is an easy case. He has to exhaust our local appeal process.
Correct.
And that was repeatedly said, and to my eye, the magistrate and the district court accepted that.
Correct.
But the question, though, is that states and especially localities can't impose conditions precedent on federal jurisdiction over a takings claim. That may be an internal administrative process, but it doesn't mean that the federal district court had no jurisdiction to adjudicate a 1983 takings claim. And if it does, tell us the authority.
I don't have anything sitting here today.
Okay, well, isn't Nick, I mean, you have to, Nick is throughout the briefings, et cetera. That's where the district court said, jurisdictionally, finality is a modest one.
Correct.
And it's de facto finality.
Correct.
Well, if you're saying that's correct, but he hasn't been able to use his house, this property for 4 years, it sounds like de facto finality.
It's not. His option would be to take the report and make the repairs. I mean, cities all the time find buildings inaccessible to use because of the condition that they're in. They went and inspected it because of the condition that this building was in. It was uninhabitable. It had.
Well, you may well win on equal protection, due process, takings clause. You may well win. There may be hazardous circumstances. But all that the magistrate and the district did, both of them did, because of aggressive arguing that I could see, is that you argued that legally, you cannot get into the doors of a federal court until you've exhausted every condition that a city imposes.
That's what the magistrate said, and we agree. They did nothing. They didn't even act like they were going to appeal it. They did absolutely nothing in this case.
Well, I mean, they obviously just debate that factually, but it is true the city council never ruled, but maybe you want to shift. Even if cities are able to put in conditions precedent that mean that, for example, a plaintiff couldn't use their house for months or years while the city adjudicates whatever level and layers it wants, even if that were true, and I think that's not true under Nick, but even if it were true, you've heard him just say that the city ordinances contemplate that if an issue is put on the agenda for the city council and then it doesn't rule for 30 days, it's effectively final.
The documents that he's provided have nothing to do with this case. The emails and the things that are there have nothing to do with this case. The discussion in April and in August about another project was the Bay Reef project, and we submitted affidavits. People said, no, that was not discussed. We never discussed your building before city council or in an executive session. Not once. The email that they attached, which is on page 24 of their initial brief, has nothing to do with their case. It doesn't even mention their case name or their place of business in any manner. The email that they've also submitted about no action, again, had nothing to do with their property or their issue. This was never brought before anyone at the city commission. The city commission never had an opportunity to address it, to review it, to look at it. He had 30 days to send a letter to the city secretary saying, hey, I want to address it before city council. It was never sent, never showed up. I don't know how the city can do anything when no one complains about the actions they've taken. And that's what we have here.
Yeah. Well, again, if you're not prepared to discuss Pakel or Nick,
I am.
Okay. And isn't it true that they are fairly explicit that states and localities can't add on local administrative remedies that must be pursued before a property owner can say, you know, I don't want to pursue your system. I want to go into federal court and assert, right or wrong, they may lose quickly, a takings claim. I don't see the authority that says a district court doesn't even, there's no injury that's justiciable.
What you're saying is that they had no obligation whatsoever to pursue any of the remedies that the city gave.
Not to try, not, well, I'm asking you if you have authority that says.
I believe that if you look under the Bowdry case, they had been given a permit to conduct a business, and the city took that away from them. We didn't take away their permits. First of all, they had applied for one and never gotten that permit. That permit is on hold. So we've never taken away a permit from them.
Okay. But that's an argument that there has been no taking, or they don't have a property interest.
Correct.
That's not an argument as to no Article III constitutional jurisdiction.
The Bowdry case involves someone who had been through the process, who had gotten a permit, and who had gone and set up their businesses, operate their businesses, for reasons we don't know, they decided to revoke without any due process that person's right to do business. We found the building to be uninhabitable because of its condition. We did not affect, if they had, they had a four-story building. It used to be a house, three stories on piers. At some point, they combined the bottom story, used the bottom story, so it's now four piers. They used the bottom story as part of the bar, which is next to the house, their Palapas bar, which operates and hasn't been bothered by this case at all. They use that bottom floor for something regarding the bar, which is next door to the house. The second floor was never used. They claim that the third and fourth floor was used 20 years ago for residential purposes, but we have no knowledge of that, no evidence of that whatsoever. It's a statement, okay? So, again, they came to us and said, we want to convert the third and fourth floor to STR. We said, fine, here's the application, you fill it out, fine. We got to inspect the building, and that's when we found that the building was uninhabitable, had problems. The permit that they had to use the bottom floor for the bar is still there. We didn't take it away from them. But none of the other floors had a permit to do anything. So when you say we took something away, we didn't take anything away. We just said you can't use this building to do it until you make the repairs.
What can they do with the building right now? Can they continue to operate it as they did prior to any of this STR? In other words, they can continue to do what they had done all the way up until when you first got at the podium, you said, here's what happened. They came to us.
Correct.
Before that, whatever they were doing there, they could continue to do today.
They still do that. That got a big party. Yes, they had their all-white, all-night party at Columbus. Yes. See, the piece of property is kind of a rectangle. And on the east end, which is closest to the bay, it's kind of a lot with a big palapa, huge palapa with a bar and seats, and they serve alcohol and food there. People sit underneath it and around it and have a music stage on the north side. Well, this house sits next to it, okay? And apparently they use the first floor as part of this bar. The second floor is storage. The third and fourth floor, we have no evidence it was ever used. So yeah, the bar itself, Palapas, still operates today.
And that's not just the outdoor portion of it?
Be very careful.
What does the record reflect? When you say, oh, they're still using it fully, they just had a big party, are you talking about the portion of the bar that's outside? Or are you saying the record reflects that there is any internal use today?
I have no knowledge of any internal
use. So in other words, the answer is for the last 4 years, they have not been permitted to use the inside of this building for anything.
Correct.
Okay.
But the business itself is still operating next to it.
Well, outside in their parking lot.
Excuse me. That's what I was trying to ask.
Okay.
what can they, let me go back. What can they use the building for? Let me rephrase. When you first got at the podium, you said, here's how this whole thing started. They came to us with this idea. Whatever they were doing then, can they do today inside the structure?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, that seems to me different than what you told me earlier. Maybe I didn't enunciate the question properly, and maybe I didn't, but at any rate, that seems different than what you explained earlier.
I thought that a building, four stories, a apparently they used the bottom floor as part of the bar which operates next door to them. And they came and said, hey, we want to convert the third and fourth floors to STR.
And we know that. But your representation was they had a huge party there. And
I apologize.
So in other words, there has been no use of that building for 4 years.
Correct.
Isn't that de facto final? The fire marshal says you can't use it, and they haven't been able to use it for 4 years.
It has been, but they've never made any effort to convince the city that they otherwise could use the building for any purpose.
And he disputes that hotly, and the record seems ambiguous as to that, or you may say it's on close analysis. It's unequivocal. They didn't go to the mayor, and it never got on the agenda for the city council. My request for legal authority is there any case that you can refer to post Nick and Paco that says a federal court lacks jurisdiction over a takings claim until a property owner exhausts whatever layers of administrative view a city has? Can you cite any case?
I believe the Beach and the Dahl case.
Beach and Dahl.
Yes, both of those deal with identical issues. I think those are both out of the Southern District of Texas, Judge Brown.
Okay, thank you, counsel. If you have, you're free to continue, or are you?
That's it.
That's it. Okay.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rebuttal argument?
Thank you. A few points. The Beach and Dahl opinions are distinguishable. Dahl involved an application for a permit to develop property. That's not an issue here. So the issue of how far does the regulation go, how is the regulation to be applied to that property? It's unclear because that person was applying for permits to develop property and they didn't satisfy the application requirements, so instead filed suit.
And so you're, just so I understand, and I'll look at these cases again, maybe I've read them, your position is the existing use, as Judge Engelhardt was asking, in that case, was never interrupted. They wanted a future use, and that's what they then immediately said had been taken from them?
That's correct.
Okay.
And then in the Beach case, I believe, if I'm thinking the same one, the city of Galveston, that case involved an apartment complex that was damaged, substantially damaged in a hurricane. Hurricane or flood, one of the two, I don't remember exactly, but the issue in that case was it was a non-conforming use under the zoning regime in the city of Galveston. The city of Galveston is a home-criminal city with zoning, Pima is not. So you had to appeal to the zoning review board, and they didn't follow the steps there, and in fact, I think in that case, the holding was they should have reapplied to the zoning review board. But that case is distinguishable because we're not dealing with the zoning review board, and those the rules that apply there are different. Here we're talking about existing use that was taken away, existing certificate of occupancy that was taken away. Whether we got permission to use the property for short-term rental is one thing, but we can't use it for long-term rental or short-term rental or any other purpose because they won't let us do anything until we change the occupancy, even though the city has been told that, okay, fine, we're not going to do short-term rentals. In the TAR case, by the way, one last thing I would mention, the Texas Supreme Court addressed an issue involving short-term rentals in the context of deed restrictions and whether they violated deed restrictions. And the issue was, is short-term rental, is the nature of land use different from residential? And they said the holding in that case was, no, it's not. It was actually Judge Brown off of that opinion, Jeff Brown now in the Southern District of Texas. The residential nature of the use is not dependent on the duration of the tenants. If it's a long-term lease or short-term lease, it's still residential. So that principle, same principle applies here, that we're not trying to change the use of any floor of the building. The only thing we did was repair some broken pipes that happened after that February 15, 2021 storm that froze the whole state of Texas. Where everybody knows over here, pipes have broken in their houses all over the state. We didn't try to do anything different after that date. The only thing different was they imposed a requirement that required us to get a change of occupancy, which the whole point of that was to strip us of grandfather status to bring the building up to current code standards, which is not required unless we're changing the use. and we weren't. We also, there's no issue about the substantial damage, like there are in some cases, where that then triggers a requirement to build, bring the property up to code. There's nothing that happened in this case, and no evidence that would require us to bring this building up to current code standards. And there's been no evidence of any hazardous condition. In fact, if there was, we probably wouldn't be able to use the outside.
With your last minute, do you disagree factually with him that there were efforts to perfect an appeal?
Yes, absolutely. The record is replete with
well, instead of saying it's replete, specifically address whether or not this was the issue put on their agenda, or if that relates to an entirely different property.
Oh, yes, there is. And there is, in fact, in our reply brief, there's even a snapshot of the email from Mr. Cho, where he says it's been put on the agenda. He's emailing Mr. Place's attorney at the time, Jeannie Irvani, who was the second attorney he hired. I was the third. It is abundantly clear that was our issue. He said it's being put on the agenda as item 24 and 25, and sure enough, it ended up on the agenda as item 24 and 25. Judge Edison, in reviewing the evidence before him, did not take that into account or just overlooked it and did not see that that was actually related to our property. But when you look at that email, I believe it's page 12 of our reply brief, then that's the evidence that shows up.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate it. The case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.